He's the Blue Jays Vice President of Baseball Operations, and Ben Cherington joins us. Ben, how are you?
Hey, Bob, Joey, how are you doing?
Good.
Doing great. Thanks a lot for your time. It's
my pleasure.
It's one of those seasons, you know, where there's not a whole lot of optimism. This team might have been on the cusp of a playoff spot, but that dissipated fairly quickly. Injuries contributed to that. Ongoing injuries, long-standing injuries. This team hasn't been anywhere near healthy all year. We don't know what that means. But for sure what it's done is it has allowed, encouraged fans to focus more on the future, spend more time looking at the players in the minor leagues and what might be coming. And it looks like a pretty good crop. We know the two big names, but there are plenty of others. You've been in this game a long time. How would you rate the prospects in this system?
Well, I'm really encouraged. We're really encouraged. I think we're getting better all the time. You can never be good enough. You know, we just got to keep getting better. I've been fortunate to be with teams at times when, you know, we felt like we've had good farm systems, and typically some of those players that you really like turn into really good regular players and some don't. So we just got to keep adding and really focus on helping the guys that we have now, you know, find opportunities to get better every day. But we see progress in a lot of areas. I mean, I think it's been a pretty good year on the development front so far. Credit to our players and coaches and performance staff for working so hard together towards that.
Is it, I think if you ask the common man on the street and you say, at what point does a player make the biggest jump? And you would assume it would be going from AAA to the major leagues. But is that true? Do you think that's the biggest jump a player has to make?
I think it's the most unique jump. You know, I mean, I think players can make jumps at any point in their development curve, so to speak. You know, it might happen when you're 18, it might happen when you're 22, it might happen when you're 26. Hopefully it's happening all the time, every day. But, you know, I think the baseball game that's played at the major league level is different than the game that's played at the minor league level, and the difference between AAA and the big leagues is still, I guess in my mind, probably bigger than the difference between any other level.
For some period of time, there was the suggestion that if you were a minor league pitcher, the best place to learn is AA, and the worst place to go is AAA. Do you subscribe to that theory now, or did you ever?
I don't think I ever did. I mean, I think both levels are important, provide an important kind of competition and challenge, and certainly the AA level, you're graduating out of A-ball, and the talent starts to get condensed, and, you know, instead of being able to pick three or four spots in the lineup where you're pretty sure you can get guys out, now those lineups stretch and they're tougher 1-9, and there's more talent concentrated, so you're playing against a different a better level of competition. It changes again in AAA because you add an older type of player, you add, you know, more guys who have been in the big leagues, guys who are preparing to be in the big leagues. The game between the pitcher and hitter changes again. More game planning, more probably a higher level of sequencing. If a hitter has a hole, pitchers find it more quickly, and vice versa. So I think the mental game prep and the mental game gets ratcheted up at the AAA level. So I guess I'd argue that they're both important, and, you know, we actually like to see guys experience both levels before they experience Toronto, if we can make that happen.
So Ben, with a top 10 ranked farm system and prospects, we know kind of the, I'll call them the big name prospects, because they've got big names attached with Bichette and Guerrero. But talk about the, it might be a bit early, but what do you foresee in September, especially, you know, Bob bringing up this team has had more than its fair share of injuries and other issues that have kept guys out of the lineup. But for September, do you see, you know, we saw Teoscar Hernandez last year come up, and I knew right away that the guy was going to be a player, just watching him and the way he carried himself. And he's had a great season. But do you see a – like, how many guys do you see coming up, or is it too early to talk about something like that?
You know, I really don't know. And not to evade your question, we haven't talked about it yet. You know, typically, you sort of take stock of where the big league team is and, you know, where are you in the standings, sort of, you know, what are you trying to get out of September? And that's kind of the first question. And then you look at, you know, where are the needs, where is there a real opportunity? Typically, major league staffs, and I would agree with this, you know, you tend not to want to have too many players in that clubhouse who don't have a purpose or don't have a, you know, some sort of role. And so you look at needs and like, okay, how many pitchers do we want to get some innings for? Where are the opportunities for position players? We'd rather not have a guy there for a month not playing at all. So look at that. And then, you know, you probably look at the 40-man after that. You know, who's on the 40-man already? Because that's a consideration going into the offseason. You do have to manage that. Who's eligible for Rule 5? So who would need to be put on the 40-man anyway that offseason? If someone's not eligible for the Rule 5, even if we know they're going to be a really good major league player, that might mean we'd wait a little longer. So you sort of run through all these questions, but it starts with the major league staff and just, you know, taking stock of where the opportunities are, where the needs are, and you know, I think when there's a question, when it's, you know, a tough call, let's say, I think you want to look closely at not a player's performance as much as how hard has he worked, what kind of teammate has he been. That can be a tiebreaker for guys. It has been. Even last year with us, I expect that would continue to happen.
With Ben Cherington, the Blue Jays Vice President of Baseball Operations. All right, let's talk about some individuals. Let's start with the obvious one. Rate Vladdy in terms of prospects you've seen during your career. I know he's the number one prospect right now in baseball. Is he as good as any you've ever had?
Well, he's as good a hitting prospect as I've ever been around in the minor leagues. I mean, you know, I think just my personal experience, you know, been pretty close, up and close with Hanley Ramirez when he was in the minor leagues, up and close with Mookie Betts when he was in the minor leagues, Dustin Pedroia, Xander Bogart. Those are some of the position players that kind of come to mind as, you know, extremely talented in their own way. And you know, some of those guys probably had, you know, sort of strengths across the board. But I'm not, I none of those, and nor can I remember anybody that was quite as advanced a hitter, pure hitter as Vladdy is. He's just, he's fun to watch hit. I mean, it's just as simple as that. It's a combination of, approach, swing, strength, power, contact ability. It's a pretty darn good combination of skills for a hitter, and he's real fun to watch. And then on top of that, that stuff you can see from a distance. You know, a scout in the ballpark could see all that. What's harder to see maybe is just how good a teammate he is, how much guys like playing with him, how much people are drawn to him, how hard he's worked on his defense to give himself a chance to play third base, and we think he will. So those are the things that maybe aren't as obvious from a distance. So, you know, I haven't thought about like ranking him where he'd rank, but as a pure hitter, I can't remember being around anyone in the minor leagues that's better.
I was about to ask you where you project him in terms of a position at the major league level. Do you still think it's third base?
Yeah, we do. We think he's going to play third base. I mean, he's, you know, his hands, his instincts, his arm strength, his arm accuracy, all that is, I don't think anybody has any question. He's going to play third. What he's worked really hard at is to put his body in a position where he can move well enough to play third. And the truth is, he's always going to have to do that. You know, he knows that. That's always going to have to be a focus so that he can keep himself in a position to make the moves that you need to make to play that position. So far, he's done that. I think when he sees himself as a big leaguer, it's playing third base. So he has a very clear vision in his mind of what he wants to do, which is a nice guide for him. And we haven't seen anything yet that suggests that he can't do it, but he'll have to keep working hard on it, no doubt.
What are his challenges, Ben?
Well, that's one. He is.
But why?
It's funny, like the way he's the way he's built is a blessing in a sense that, you know, his body really, I think, helps him be a great hitter.
Right.
He's got such a strong core and center of gravity that it helps him create power at the plate. It also means that he's got to work really hard to stay mobile enough to play third. So that's the obvious challenge. Other than that, I think the other thing he's got to, people talk about the benefits of having a father, having his father, you know, being around his father and being around that environment. And some people ask me actually, it feels like sometimes I'm asked the question by people who might perceive that it could be a challenge, that would be added burden or expectation. And I don't know for sure. I'm not in his shoes. I can't completely relate or understand what he goes through. But my sense, you know, if anything, having been around his father and been in those environments all his life really is more benefit, because he's just so sort of used to being he's so comfortable in a clubhouse. He's so comfortable at a baseball field. It's hard for me to imagine that anything he'll come across in the future, in the minor leagues or in the big leagues, will be much of a surprise
right.
or a distraction for him. Look, there'll be more and more attention as he goes up, and he'll have to deal with that, and he'll have to learn it. But I doubt anything will be much of a surprise for him.
One more question on Vladdy. How close is he? And we are hearing that you may move him to Buffalo. Any truth in that?
Well, he's getting closer to playing in games in Dunedin. He's been rehabbing. He has been down there for, I guess almost a month now, and he's doing great. He's passing all the tests. We'd expect him to start getting into games in the Gulf Coast League any day now. And then from there, there'll be a progression. He'll have to clear some hurdles there. He'll have to get built up to 9 innings. He'll have to, some of that will be DH, and then he'll get into third base, and then he'll have to play 9 innings back-to-back, et cetera, et cetera. So there'll be a series of things he has to do. And I think the way we'd think about it would be, prior to the injury, he had been doing some things that where it would have been reasonable for someone to suggest or ask the question, well, is it time to move to Buffalo? Because his performance was so good. And as I said before, he's a good teammate. He's working on his defense. He's doing all that stuff. So it would have been reasonable to talk about that at the time he got hurt. And then he got hurt. Now he's going to come back. And now we just have to make sure he's in the best position possible, physically, mentally, I think, before we'd make that move. So all I know for now is he's going to start playing in games in the Gulf Coast League here very soon, and he'll get on a progression from there. And, he may spend some time in New Hampshire, as he works through that. And we just want to make sure he's in the best possible position physically, mentally, before he's introduced to a new challenge, which would be moving up to another level. We would expect that to happen at some point. I don't know when.
So Ben, you play in a division. Boston and the Yankees have had incredible seasons. Boston's leading the division. But you're still hanging in there at 42 and 49. As far as templates go in the way teams are built, and the Yankees and the Red Sox, there's a lot of static about how much money they spend on free agency. But when you look at both of their lineups, their best players are generally coming from within. And you look at the way the Blue Jays now, in the last couple of years, you had the runs in 2014, 15, and we've had a couple of rough years, but there seems to be a good pipeline of prospects. But is that the best way to build a team, especially when you're considered a semi-budget conscious team like the Blue Jays? Of course, you don't spend as much money as some of the other teams.
You mean the best way in terms of building from within?
Yeah, I mean, you got so many good young players, and you look at these other teams, and they get credit for they spent throwing money around, but they're actually building from within, right? Because because you were there, right, on the Red Sox.
Yeah, I mean, look, there may be an exception that I'm not aware of, but I can't think of a team in recent baseball history that has had any sort of sustained success. Sustained meaning, you know, 5, 7, mm-hmm. 6, 8 years stretch of success without a core of homegrown players. Maybe it's happened, but I'm not aware of it if it has happened. So you can, you know, smart people who work really hard and, which is the case with Toronto, you can sometimes make enough good moves and you know, you're always going to have some homegrown players, but make enough good moves to put together a good team, a really good team. In Toronto's case, 15 and 16 teams were both really good teams, doing it more through acquisition, and that is possible. I think it seems, based on history, it's a lot harder to do it over 6 to 8 years or longer without a real core of homegrown players, and then creating a steady flow of homegrown players. You're always going to complement that core. The Red Sox have complemented their core. The Yankees have complemented their core. But you're right that at the center of that are young players who came up through those systems and or were acquired as young players and have formed a core. And that seems like, and then you can, you know, you look at the Cardinals within the last decade, you look at where the Cubs are now, you look at, you know, you just go around the league.
The Astros.
You know, that have the Astros, the way they're set up. The teams that have sustained success or have a chance to sustain success seem to be built that way. So, and then the argument is, okay, well, what's the best way to win the whole thing? I would argue the best way to win the whole thing is give yourself as many chances as possible to win the whole thing. So the best way to win the World Series is to get as many tickets as possible into the World Series or into the playoffs. And I would argue the best way to do that is to build a team that has a chance to be successful over a longer period of time. That's easier said than done. And in our division, we've got to be really good at a lot of different things in order to do that. You know, we've got to be, frankly, in the long run, and Mark and Ross talk about this all the time, it's actually, I think, part of why a lot of us are here, because we see such a challenge here. But, in you know, really, if you think about it, in the American League East, we've got to be better than the Yankees at scouting. We've got to be better than the Yankees at player development. We've got to be better at the Yankees in all of these areas, because the Yankees and Red Sox are probably going to spend more than we are on Major League payroll. It doesn't mean we won't spend a lot. The Blue Jays have spent a lot on Major League payroll. We haven't spent as much as the Red Sox and the Yankees, and likely won't going forward. So that's not an excuse. It's just a reality, which means that we have to be really good, arguably better, in other things than our competitors. And we are in the AL East, and some people see that as a challenge or, you know, maybe a limitation. To me, it's an opportunity, because I think it forces us to be better. I think it makes us a better organization over time, because every day we wake up and look at the rest of the teams in our division. It's not just the Red Sox and Yankees, by the way. The Rays are exceptionally well run. The Orioles are in a down period now. They've had a good period recently. So playing in this division just makes you better, and that's what we need. We need to be better in every imaginable area.
Before we let you go, most fans know just about everything there is to know about Bo Bichette. They're aware of Danny Jansen. Kevin Biggio has started to get some attention. Jonathan Davis was promoted to Buffalo now. Tell me a little bit about Kevin Smith, who I know very little about, who some people think is a true prospect and is moving quickly up the charts. Give us a brief synopsis of what he's like.
I think Smitty and Kevin Biggio actually have fair amount in common, other than they were both drafted sort of near each other and out of the ACC, so they have that in common. But I think they have other things in common too. You know, what really sticks out to me about both those guys is we talk about, one of the things we talk about a lot in the minor leagues is practicing with a purpose. So it's a simple thing, but if you think about someone who spends, it could be anything. It could be golf or baseball or whatever you're working on. You could spend an hour doing that. Two people spend the same hour doing that. You can either get better during that hour or not. And just being out there for an hour doesn't mean you're getting better. The way you get better is to be very purposeful and intentional about what that practice looks like. And elite performers find a way to practice better than non-elite performers. And so we talk about that a lot in the minor leagues and what does good practice look like and how do we do it? How do we do it consistently every day? But Kevin Biggio and Kevin Smith are two guys who are examples for us of practicing with a purpose. Those two guys find a way to get the most out of their day from a practice standpoint, and then it shows up on the field during games. And it's really fun to watch because you see them getting better. I mean, you know, watched Biggio last year. He's always worked hard. He's always been a great teammate. He could always do certain things well. But the strides he's made as a hitter this year, you know, he had a hard time getting to a fastball in the inner half of the plate last year, and he knew it, and he went about fixing that and finding a way to make that adjustment. He practiced really hard. He found a way to do the kind of practice he needed to do to make that adjustment, and he's doing that much better this year, and it's helped him hit for a lot more power. It's elevated his entire game. He's done the same. He's made the same improvement defensively. He's now starting to play some third base. On top of it, he's a great teammate. Kevin Smith is also a great teammate. Kevin Smith always had raw power. He showed some raw power last year in Bluefield. He has good defensive ability, but there's been quite a bit of swing and miss in Kevin's game going back to college,
right?
And then even last year in short season, he knew that he wanted to find a way to maintain his power at the plate, but improve his approach, so he was having more consistent at-bats, maybe cutting down on the strikeouts a little bit, and he did that. He found a way to practice in the right way to maintain the power in his swing, but cut down strikeouts, have more consistent at-bats. He's done that, and that's showing up on the field. So they actually are similar in many ways, but specifically because both of those guys really stand out as guys who find a way to practice well every day.
Very quickly. Smith, 9-for-9 in stolen bases last year, 12-for-14 this year. Is he just a guy who can steal the odd base, or is he a real base stealing threat? Like the old days we used
to
see.
He's really
guys.
Smart. Yeah, I mean, he's just a smart player, and he's prepared. And so he's not going to win a race with Jonathan Davis in a straight line. But he's a smart, really well prepared player, and so yeah, guys like that will find opportunities to steal bases. I didn't even know those numbers honestly off the top of my head,
yeah.
But it doesn't surprise me that his success rate is so good because, you know, when he goes, he probably sees an opportunity and he knows he's got a pretty good chance to be safe.
Listen, we won't take any more of your time up, but I've enjoyed this and love to chat with you again down the road. Hopefully, we'll do that. Thanks, Ben.
Enjoyed it, guys. Thank you.